Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back with another episode of the Startup Hustle. This is your host today, Matt Watson. I'm excited to be joined today by Matthias Raiolfi from Tent. We're going to be talking about embedded insurance today. We're going to hear about his journey as an entrepreneur and how their business can help other companies. Sounds like resell insurance and sell insurance products built into their service offerings. I think it's pretty cool. And before we get started, I do want to remind everybody that today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably and has the platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Matthias, how are you doing today?
Hi, Matt. I'm doing great. How are you?
So I thought it was interesting that I guess we both kind of have the same name, but from different languages. So I'm Matthew and you're Matthew in Portuguese, right?
That is right. People, when they typically see my name, they get a bit, you know, confused and uncertain how to pronounce and find it different. But it's as simple as it is Matthews, but it is in Portuguese. So it's kind of very, very mainstream, actually.
And I've always known I'm Mateo in Spanish, I think. So, but I'll answer to whatever people call me.
But yes, same here.
So welcome to the show. You're actually from San Francisco, right?
Yeah, I'm originally from Brazil, calling from San Francisco. Yes.
All right. Well, so tell us a little more about your background and what led you to be one of the founders and CEO of Tent.
Yeah, so my background is, as I mentioned, I'm born and raised in Brazil, in a city outside Sao Paulo. And then I spent most of the early professional career in college in Sao Paulo, was a consultant. But I knew I always wanted to start my own business. And then I was deciding what to do next. And it made sense for me to come to business school or to go to business school and come to the U.S. for it. So I ended up getting to Harvard Business School. And I saw that as my kind of gateway to the United States and to Silicon Valley more broadly. So I wanted to start a global company in the tech space, and then HBS was a way to allow me to get connections and to end up here in the San Francisco area, which is what I did. So after graduation, I was one of the early employees in a company called Turo. At the time, back in 2014, it was still called Relay Rides, was a Series A company with about 15 to 20 employees. So very early in their journey, and I wasn't fortunate enough to be with the company for 4 years. And by the time I left, it was already a very successful business with over 400 people at the time. And that's where I met my co-founder, Jerome. So Jerome was also an early employee. He joined a little bit earlier than me, and he was running all the data data engineering of the company. And we end up, both of us, spending 80% of our time in insurance. He was building models and doing kind of fancy data things around insurance. And I was launching the business in different countries. And I spent 80% of my time kind of sourcing insurance. And every time I wanted to be in a different different country. And that was the origin story of 10. So I went from being in Brazil to full circle being here in the Bay Area, running my own tech startup.
So for those who aren't familiar, Turo is the company that allows somebody like me to rent my sports car for the weekend to somebody else that wants to rent my car, right? It's like a car sharing program.
It is. It is absolutely. So an easy way to think about it is an Airbnb for cars, right? It's the idea that you can share your cars with others, but you can also rent cars from any individual now in many different countries. So the time that was back 2014, the sharing economy wasn't as big and mainstream as today. Even companies like Airbnb and Uber were relatively small startups at that point. So it was very interesting to see the evolution, not only of Turo as a company, but the sharing economy more broadly.
Well, so what I love about your story, and a lot of entrepreneurs go through this, right? They work in a specific business, specific industry, and they find pain points, and then they decide to go out and start their own company to solve those pain points, right? And for you, that pain point was seeing how difficult it was to find insurance for this type of car rent, you know, car sharing service, and then trying to find it in all these different countries, right? I mean, is that a fair statement?
It is a fair statement. So you're absolutely right that we've suffered the pain point, both my co-founder and I. And Tint was the product that we wish existed when we were working at Turo. And I do agree that that's a very good sign that the entrepreneurs and founders are into something, because it means that they spent a lot of time thinking about the problem. They suffer. They already had to find some solutions themselves to execute in what they're trying to do. So there's a higher chance that they can actually empathize with the customer, and especially in the early days when there's not a lot of data, not a lot of signal, that you have to be based about any intuition and any knowledge. That tends to be a good signal of or a good signal for startups.
Yeah, I worked at one of the first jobs I ever had was at a company that resold concert and sporting event tickets. It was a company called Ticket Solutions. And one of the things that they did is they sent hundreds of FedEx and UPS packages a day. And they noticed that like dozens of them a day would be delivered late or whatever, and they should get refunds for all of them. And actually the guy who owned it, you know, recognized that problem. And then we built some software to audit all the labels to get refunds. And then he eventually spun that out and it became a huge company, was one of the number one companies in the industry to audit shipping labels. And, you know, I always love those stories where, you know, as a byproduct of one business, you find another problem. And that's why we talk a lot about as being an entrepreneur is pivoting. Is sometimes as working on a problem, you figure out that there's actually a different problem that maybe needs to be solved. So I always love that story. And so from your guys' start for Tint, you know, what was the original problem you were trying to solve? Was it had to do with car insurance, or was it a more specific thing that you were, or more broad thing that you were trying to solve?
Yeah. So for Tint, we were trying to solve the problem that, or was it still the same vision, which is, you know, helping companies like Turo to create and launch and succeed in launching their embedded insurance products, right? Which means like insurance and protection products, they are a feature of their car business. So if you think about in the Turo example, whenever you want to rent a car, so suppose you're coming to, I'm traveling, I'm going to rent somebody else's Porsche 911. I'm offered in the checkout an option for an additional value to protect myself against any damage that may happen to this car, right? And Turo can give you different packages and making that happen. So like very similar to how car rental companies do, but obviously Tutu does in a much better way, less pushy, with a fair pricing that is not just to the risks. But the idea is like, you know, we had the vision from the beginning that we want to support more companies to do exactly that and not have as much of a painful journey as we had when we were trying to do it ourselves. So we had the vision, we had the big picture, but obviously we are now 4.5 years down the road and we haven't built the full journey yet. It's a very big and ambitious journey. So what we did is like at the beginning, we try to focus more on problems we knew at Turo, more focus on analytics, more focus on kind of the data aspects of this problem. And over time, we started to build more and more of the blocks, right? The building blocks that are required to eventually be able to power any tech company in any space to create their own embedded insurance products.
So today, do you focus on specific industries, like specific verticals, specific kinds of things?
Our platform is horizontal in a way that it can support any vertical. So today we have customers in over 10 different verticals, from crypto deposits to shipping to car sharing. But we do have a special focus today in shipping. So all use cases that relates to shipping goods, like in country, mostly through trucking. We also have a good big focus in vacation rentals. So all the use cases around sharing your property like in Airbnb or Vrbo or those platforms, that's another use case that has gotten big for us. And our customers, typically they are tech platforms, they are venture-backed startups from, we see, you know, starting a Series A, B, all the way to some kind of public companies. And what they all share in common is that they can see ways that insurance or protection more broadly can help their customers, now can remove some intrinsic risk of their car business so their customers can trust them more and convert better, right? So the example of Turo, imagine there was no insurance. First, right. The person the host who never trust like some stranger with a Porsche 911.
Right.
Second, even for the renter, you are now driving like a very expensive car that if something outside of your control happens, you are suddenly liable for a big financial loss. So there's an example where insurance make things work, but we can see the same pattern in different types of business.
So is the key to your guys' platform dynamically figuring out what those insurance rates are? So it's not like, oh, you're renting a car that's worth $40,000 and the rate is always, you know, $100 a day or whatever. I mean, is the key to what you guys do being much more dynamic and how you figure out what those rates should be?
Yeah, so the big transformation that is happening, right? So I think one thing I learned about startups is that your chance of success increases exponentially when you connect yourself to a big trend, right? There's something big happening, and then you are just kind of part of this movement or this phenomenon. And in our case, the big trend behind embedded insurance or embedded finance more broadly is this idea that, you know, all those tech platforms are generating so much data about their customers. How, you know, again, going back to the tour example, how people use cars, are they first time users, age, like what kind of car, many different facts. So platforms are creating this trove of data that, you know, a traditional insurance company doesn't have, and they own the customer, right? So they have already paid to acquire the customer. The customer is already using the core business of that company. So offering insurance is an add-on revenue that comes virtually no acquisition cost, right? So when you combine those two things, the availability of data plus the customers already being there, it enables these companies to your point, create a product that is personalized. It's much more relevant to their audience that not only has a higher conversion as a insurance product, but it kind of catalyzes the core business, right? So Turo converts better, or if you think about the shipping, right? So you're buying a sneaker and a sneaker costs $2,000. Well, ideally you have some protection that if something goes wrong, if data item is damaged, you're going to get paid to the full value of the merchandise. And I think we can, again, see that happening all over many kind of different industries, use cases. Think about how Tesla is creating their own insurance. Apple Care is a form of insurance. You know, Amazon is getting into insurance. So like if you look around and if you fast forward 10 years, the brands you love are going to be the ones providing you a lot of the insurance protections, because most customers don't necessarily want to think about insurance. And if that protection can come with the things they love, that is a better, much better user experience than if you have to download an app and think about it and have to go purchase it separately.
So when somebody uses your platform to provide these insurance offers, so like say shipping, you know, I sell shoes or whatever, and I'm like, as you said, who is actually the underwriter if those shoes get lost and it's a $2,000 claim? Is it still the business owner that somehow it becomes liable, or your guys' platform, or is there still a third party and, you know, insurer that carries that? Or
yeah, in our platform, our customers can choose how much of the risk they want to take. So if they tell us that, no, I don't want to take any risks, then we will find Jumpite underwriters. So our platform works as a marketplace. So we have underwriters, and then they will match the best underwriter with the risk that you are offering as a platform. But we see that our customers, some of them, they decide to either take all the risk or to take some part of the risk. Because the reality is that after, again, going back to the data element, after a year, 2-3 years in business, the data that those companies generate, it's already very predictive of the risk. So if they do it well, if they monetize it well, they can create programs that are fairly profitable, right? So some of our customers are like, yeah, I'm doing all the work. Why would I transfer this risk? But no, depends on the strategy of each company. But our platform is designed to give them the option to choose how much of the risk they want to take.
But in your company is never the underwriter. You guys never have to carry that risk.
We are not. Yeah, we are. We see ourselves as the platform and the orchestrator of, like, you know, making sure that things are working. So we see ourselves more like Stripe than a bank or an insurance company.
So I would imagine the hardest part of this is trying to match some of the weird things that people want insured to these underwriters, right? Like, how do you convince an underwriter, you know, how much risk there is and what the price should be for like somebody borrowing a Porsche, right? Like that seems like a kind of a hard thing to do until you've got a lot of data, like you said.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And this is, we spend countless hours working on this. And sometimes it's very hard. Sometimes it's like, it's more obvious, but to your point, the answer will come from the data, right? So either the underwriters have some data, some similar use cases that they can try to use, or in many ways is the platform that has to take the leap of faith based on what they understand about the customers, the data they currently have. And then because this uncertainty you're talking about is especially true in the beginning, but after a few months that you're doing, right, you have enough data to say, oh, this is price too high, too low, how is the conversion going? And again, we build our platform with tools with that in mind, with that kind of change in experimentation in mind, so that our customers and the underwriters, they can have the tools to make those adjustments when the time come. Like what we learn is like we want to have both sides, right, of this platform happy, because if one side is making money, the other isn't, it's obviously not a sustainable relationship. So, but if it goes back to the data.
So do you guys also have customers that are in e-commerce or retail? Like when I go to Best Buy or Target and they try and get me to buy a protection plan for $3 for a toaster, like do you guys' platform do that kind of stuff too? Or is that like something that's been around for so long that it's kind of more of a commodity or something, then you guys don't do that part of it?
That's a great question. It's interesting that you seem to understand a lot of this space, which is great. But I worked at
Sears 20 years ago and sold appliances and their crazy ass protection plans. So
I see. I understand. No, that's great. That's great. So we basically, most of our use cases are innovative, right? So right. I think it's more likely that this use case, your point, people have been doing for a while, but you know, what we're seeing is like, you know, sometimes like the Sears, like they probably use a very simple pricing logic that doesn't take much into account other than the price of the good. And they just say something like, it's 10% of the price or whatever is the logic that they use. Like what we're seeing is that what we can help innovate there is like, okay, suppose now the best buyers in the example want to sell it online, and online they're going to have a lot more information, right, that is beyond the price of the item. So can we help them use that information to price them more accurately so that they price less for the cases where the risk is, the price is too high because the risk is low, and then they can probably charge more. Supposing bicycles break a lot, I'm just making up here, but
right, yeah,
then they can charge the bicycles and the bicycles in California, whatever the factors, like more than they would do for the toaster. So they can sell more protection for toasters and price the bicycle one accordingly. So the idea is like, every insurance use case is changing, but the more mature it is, like say auto or home insurance, things like that, the higher the probability that the incumbents have already established a good competitive advantage that is harder to change versus like Airbnb or risks from home sharing, which is something that didn't fully exist like 15 years ago. Whereas Alto, the underwriters have been doing that for probably 80 years at this point.
Well, I do want to take a second to remind everybody that finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably, use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs, and then see what available developers, testers, and leaders are available or ready to join your team. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. Yet at Fullscale, we've worked with a couple different local companies that do insurance that, like Medicaid Part B or like some other kind of insurance platforms. Another customer that does like pet insurance. Mm-hmm. It seems like there's a lot of technology and innovation going on in the insurance space.
There is even a name for this, which is called InsurTech, right? Which is the intersection between insurance and technology. And now if you go, there's a conference called InsurTech Connect in Las Vegas, and is now attended by tens of thousands of people. So definitely InsurTech has grown to be a major part of the, or at least growing part of the insurance industry. And the incumbents, they understand that, and they're all trying to do some, make investments and trying to change some of the ways they do. What we do think we find exciting is that, and going back to embedded insurance, this is a space where, say, Airbnb, Uber, the tech platforms have a lot of advantages, right, in how they can do things. And they're creating something new that wasn't possible before their core business, before their marketplace even existed. So that's why we see the pace in the insurance industry for innovation, it's getting faster, but in an embedded, it's very fast because then you're working by the speed of the tech platforms and trying to match that with the speed of an insurance industry, but you can move faster.
So it sounds like most of what you guys do is probably kind of more one-off, like transaction or event-based, or do you guys also do like reoccurring insurance, like home insurance or car insurance, health insurance, any of that kind of stuff?
So we do, I think you're right, that most of our use cases are typically like there's shorter policies, right? We don't have, I'm trying to think here, anything that is necessarily auto or home or those standard insurance. But we do have customers, for example, one of our public customers is a company called Deal. They help startups hire contractors in different parts of the world. And they provide all the infrastructure payments, the contracts, all the regulatory things, compliance around it. And for Deal, like you can, as a company, you sign up for their plan, is a subscription, so it's monthly. And we help Deal create what they call Deal Premium. So the idea is that you pay extra for like a premium tier service, and that comes with a protection, right? So if there's anything goes wrong on the contractor relationship, Deal will compensate you up to a certain amount for misclassification risk, for things like that. But anyway, long way of saying, like in that case, it's a recurring policy, right? Like the company is covered every month as long as they have the employee, the contractor still being paid to the Deal platform.
Yeah, I think it seems like InsurTech is still really, really far behind tech wise compared to some other industries. You know, I've had other people on the show, and I mentioned at Full Scale, we've done some work for some people that it seemed like for some of these things to figure out what the rates should be and to get things underwritten can still take like days. Like the decision making for certain types of insurance is still extremely slow. It's not like fully automated. Is that kind of what you see across a lot of the industry?
Yes, I think it depends on the company. It depends on the type of insurance. But anyway, I think it is true that the innovation in insurance, finance broadly, but insurance, I'd say, even slower than finance. Like the innovation pace has been slower than folks anticipated. And no, part of it is just now you can, it's how the system works, how the system has been designed. So there's definitely a lot of opportunity for innovators in the space. Part of this is just that is now, it's a highly regulated industry, right? So you can move as fast as you want, but you know, depending on the types of insurance, your point, if you have to file rates at a certain state and wait for their like 3 months for their approval.
Yeah.
There's so much you can do, right? So I think one of the kind of challenges that like all entrepreneurs that work in insurance face is like, how can you find those pockets where you can innovate faster? And as you start, like insurance is such a large industry that there are definitely niches and places where innovation can be done faster. And that's where we see a lot of the innovation happening, right? So in places like, you know, like claims analytics, in places like some of the underwriting and pricing technology, in the like core softwares, like those are places where you have like things happening faster. Let's say then you're trying to launch a new auto insurance because auto insurance is extremely regulated. So every time you want to your point, you found a better way to price, great. You're going to have to comply with now regulations in 50 different states and how you can price this car insurance and then take months to get through the approval. So yeah, I think one of the name of the games here is trying to find like an angle and obviously still being compliant with regulations, because the regulations are there for a good reason, right? One of the, I'd say, core mistakes that the entrepreneurs make in insurance is to assume that like regulations slow down for no good reason. Like, no, it's absolutely right. They are there because they are there to protect consumers, and insurance is ultimately a promise, right? So if you don't have the guardrails in place to make sure that people will honor their promises, a lot of bad things can happen.
Well, so you mentioned earlier, I think you said that you guys provide your insurance platform for about 10 different verticals. So across all those different verticals, do some of them really pain in the neck in regards to compliance and regulation and all that stuff? And then some of them are just kind of wide open and there's not a lot of compliance to deal with?
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know how much we want to get in the very deep of insurance, but I think in a broad, very broad terms, there are two types of insurance lines, right? One is called admitted, which is the, say, mainstream insurance, auto, home, this kind of things where they're very regulated, like you have to get approval everywhere and things like that. And they are more, and for every kind of more of the innovative types, let's say the risks from Airbnb, right? The home sharing risk of sharing your home with a stranger, like those are typically places that is called surplus lines. So like those are kind of, they can run with less kind of let's call it oversight, because they admitted market. So if you go to Progressive, if you go to Geico, and you want to get insurance for these kind of things, they will say no, like it doesn't fall under my kind of normal business. So for that kind of use cases, is less, there's less oversight. So you still, you know, you have, you know, the basics are in place, but at least you can have some streamlined innovation. And there are also like certain products for certain use cases, they can be structured as a non-insurance product, right? So if you think about your, when you go to Avis and you say, I want to buy insurance, they're, what they're selling you is not insurance, it's a loss damage waiver, which has the same kind of frameworks and modus operandi as insurance, but is effectively a different legal classification. So it has different oversight. So again, I think that's one of the hard things of operating in the insurance industry, is to really understanding all of these nuances and complexities without getting paralyzed. And
well, and that's why I ask, because I'm thinking like, man, starting a new company in insurance, insure tech like this, it's like, is it take 6, 12, 18, 24 months just to figure out like, how do we even do this for a specific industry and go through all the regulation and all this versus like, you know, doing insurance for shipping sneakers seems like a pretty easy one compared to, you know, home insurance or car insurance and some other things. I just, was that a huge hindrance, you know, for you guys when you first got started?
I think you summarized it well. So some kind of those insurance or protections are a lot easier, right? So if you're on the hook for shipment, it's going to take 2 days and the maximum loss, it's $100 or $200. It's a much easier use case than if you're insuring some auto liability that potentially is some bill that will be paid for the lifetime of somebody and cost millions of dollars. So I think your intuition is absolutely right. So that's one of the things I mentioned about the ability of knowing the space and kind of being able to find those pockets. For us, because, you know, we're connecting back to our background, right? We came from this kind of short-term sharing economy types of risk, and our first customers were in this space, which kind of checks all the boxes that we're talking about here. Is typically like a short, not too complex. Go back to the Porsche 911, right? Like even that being already a very high risk, if you insure the physical damage of this, is up to the value of the car. It's called $50,000. So it's not easy per se, but it's like it's a lot easier than millions of dollars of potential loss in other kinds of risk. So we were fortunate that we were part of this new world where not a lot of insurers or other companies understand and or want to play. And those are risks. They are insurable. It's not, they are not as hard as any other kind. And that's kind of, we grew up from there.
So what's the future for Tent? What are you guys focused on right now? Are you very much in, looks like you raised a bunch of money earlier this year. Congrats on that. You guys very much in growth mode? Like what's expanding the products and the verticals? You know, what are you guys focused on right now?
Yeah, we are definitely focused on growing. So you're right that we raised our Series A earlier this year. So we have runway for quite a bit of time now, but we're definitely hiring, we're growing. We grew our team probably like 5 times since like, you know, last year. And we'll continue to grow more next year as well. So what we're doing is like, we're definitely expanding our product, like going to more verticals. We're making it work better, right? So there's like, as any startup, you have, you know, the first round when things are working, but then you kind of, you can't keep going years just making that better and optimizing each of these states. So we're primarily focused in the United States. So we'll continue to be there. I think one of the, you know, main challenges for, not only for us, but I guess from, I would imagine, any other founder today is like knowing how fast you go, right? Because on one hand, you have the opportunity, and then that probably drives you to go fast, as fast as you can, and increase burn and all those things like that. But on the other hand, you have the tough financing environment where you probably don't want to be in a place where you really need the money today. So we're really trying to navigate now day by day, seeing how the world is developing and kind of try to get this balance right.
Are you guys doing any hiring? Does everybody listening need to go check out your openings?
We are. So if you go to jobs.tint.ai, you can see all the positions they're opening, but we're opening a few more that we're going to start hiring for early next year as well. So, I mean, yeah, we're absolutely hiring.
So what do you see as your guys' biggest challenges going forward? What do you see as the big challenge on the horizon for you guys?
The biggest challenge, I would say, again, going back to the insurance and the regulation, is like, how can you scale? There's definitely a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of like activity and tailwinds on the insurance. But to your point, as we get to the details, like, how can you support more verticals? How can you scale? How can you find more underwriters? So most of our challenges today, I would say, are growth pains. Like, you know, how can we do what we're doing better, faster, scale without, you know, having to redesign everything that we did before? I think it's definitely, you know, because, you know, Series A, you have early product market fit, you prove that it's a big market, and prove that there's something exciting there. But then, you know, by Series B, right, you need to now show that you have no longer like a good product, but you have a fully functioning company that is ready to go to higher scales. And that's definitely where we are in our journey.
Well, remind everybody that today's episode of the Startup Hustle was brought to you by FullScale.io. If you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders, FullScale can help. We have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts. When you visit FullScale.io, all you need to do is answer a few questions and let our platform match you up with our fully vetted, highly experienced team of software engineers. At FullScale, we specialize in building a long-term team that works only for you. Learn more when you visit FullScale.io. Well, I've really enjoyed having you on the show today. One thing I like to do is, as we round this out, is do you have any other kind of final tips for other entrepreneurs out there? It could be about anything, about, you know, being a business owner and an entrepreneur.
My tip is something that we luckily had, and I didn't know that was very important. And looking back, I think it is mission critical. Is like having grit. I cannot stress how important it is for founders to have grit. And if you can figure out a way to just keep going, regardless of what happened, and, you know, find a way to not run out of money, but keep finding creative ways that you can keep going, having the fire, keeping the fire burning inside, you will find a way. And eventually, you know, you find kind of growth paths, and you kind of find the next chapter, unlock the next chapter of the story. Like, it took us at least 2 years to find a good, you know, traction, to see things starting to click. And we've been doing that for 4.5 years, and we're far, far, far from being, you know, where we wanna be. But I think for us, like, the main lesson so far was that, like, we could, and I think many others would have stopped, and we didn't. And I think that's something that, you know, if you can, you hear this startup advice all the time. It's like Paul Graham's, like, from Y Combinator, is like, be a cockroach, impossible to kill. And it sounds like, you know, a little bit too vague, but it's incredibly true in the founder journey.
Yeah, at some point in time, you've got to be very passionate about what you're doing, and it's that drive every day that gets you up every day and keeps fighting the fight. And, you know, it's a never ending sense of problems. And One of my favorite all time quotes is from Mike Tyson. It's like, everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face. And yeah. It feels like, as an entrepreneur, you know, you got to have grit, because you just get punched in the face every week for some stupid reason that you don't see coming. So
absolutely. And you get punched many times. And it's your point. If you're not passionate, it's going to be hard to keep the fire going. Yeah. So, you know, the related is, pick something that you are passionate about, the cause you care, that you really want to be solved, because that's kind of one of the ways you can keep the grit and keep going.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. Again, this was Matthias Riolfi from Tint, which is TINT.AI. You can check them out. And well, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you very much, Matt. I really appreciate our chat and thanks for having me.
All right. Take care.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.